Welcome to The Roll Down. This podcast is for people of color who need a space to be known and seen, and guidance for those who are in the pursuit of justice. We are your hosts, Matthew Melendrez
and Alethea Lamberson. Matthew, it's good to see you. Good to
it's
be
good
back.
Good to be here.
Yeah, it's been probably about a couple weeks since we recorded after our two-part state of our country that we recorded.
There's a lot to cover.
There was a lot. And we went back and forth about this episode, right? You know, we have a series coming up that y'all will hear about, but just what do we do with this episode? You know, bouncing some ideas around, and I really feel that God gave us a space to talk about what we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And even what we're going to title this episode, "To Be Seen Is So Powerful." And we give honor to one of our dear friends, Faye, who made that quote to us as we were chatting about the rise in violence and anti-Asian racism that has been rampant in our country the last couple of weeks. And really, if you've been paying attention, it's been a lot during COVID. We talked about that on mm-hmm. a previous episode. And historically, you know, there's much there, but we really want to take space in this episode to create space and to acknowledge and honor the Asian American community in the midst of all that you have been experiencing and seeing and holding and navigating. Again, not just the last couple of weeks, for the last year, mm-hmm. but I know it's been heightened in the last couple of weeks. And so honestly, we really hope our Asian and Asian American brothers and sisters will be seen in this episode. You know, there's another thing that Faye shared with us and moved me to tears, just mm-hmm. how grateful she was that we would take an episode to talk about what's going on. Mm-hmm. But when she said, "You begin to see us and you begin to see me because our history tends to be invisible." And that really grieves me, the latter part of what she said.
Damn, getting emotional just you saying that.
But it really ties into, Matthew, our heart behind the podcast, right? A space for people of color to be known and seen. And it is very weighty. Matthew and I are not Asian Americans and not of Asian descent. And so for a Black woman and a brown man to hop on a podcast and talk about the rise in violence against the Asian community, it's really heavy. It's really weighty. But we're grateful to our friends who have entrusted some of these things that we're going to talk about to us today for the ways they've encouraged us, that they've spoken in to what we're going to, again, mm-hmm. just highlight. But, you know, there's so much we won't be able to cover. And just want to acknowledge, as I said, we're not Asian. And so we know we're not going to do it perfectly. One of our friends, Jocelyn, had just talked about this tension, just like to be the correct type of woke, you know, just to say the right thing. And I've had to, you know, talk to people about that as they've addressed anti-Blackness and been growing in their awareness and understanding of Black history and Black people. And so I resonate with that. And so for me to even acknowledge that, as I've felt that coming into preparation for this episode, but just acknowledging, Matthew and I know we're not going to do it perfectly. We are learning. We have so much to learn. And it's interesting, and it feels like another layer of evil. This is happening during Black History Month. And so just acknowledging the tension of that. I think for myself, I shared it on Instagram Live not long ago about the tension I have just felt as a Black woman during Black History Month. And what do I share? Not just make it about facts, but tell the story, but also mm-hmm. wanting to use my voice and acknowledge what's happening in the Asian community. And so there's just a very present tension, a very real tension there. But just want to acknowledge that. But that's not a time. We can do both. We can honor and uplift Black men and women throughout the history of this nation, even prior to that, because the African diaspora, people existed prior to, you know, slavery and some of those things. And so we can take space to honor that, but we can also hold space to acknowledge the dehumanization and the evil mm-hmm. that is running rampant in the Asian community right now. And so again, just want to acknowledge those things and just yeah, we're figuring out and we're learning as we go. So,
yeah. And it was really special just that you mentioned that we had a group of friends to speak into this episode. And honestly, I just felt like we should have recorded that and let that be the episode, just because the wisdom, the pain, the beauty that was displayed in that time, particularly from Faye when she said that, like, to be seen is so powerful. And we just acknowledge that even within our own communities, in Black and Latino communities, that there has been a lack of seeing Asian Americans and Asian people from Asian descent. And we grieve that. And we acknowledge that there's racism and prejudice that comes from our community to our Asian brothers and sisters. And one of our friends, before we started this episode, she had said, "I just trust you guys." And my response back was, "I don't feel we deserve that trust."
Yeah.
And I think that I hope to be someone who can, I want to strive to be someone who's safe and welcoming and an ally for our Asian American brothers and sisters. And part of that is because this, what I have continued to learn culturally from our Asian American and Asian brothers and sisters is a cultural value of not taking up too much space and deferring. And so even what you're saying as far as the, just that I think that I have witnessed a lot of our Asian brothers and sisters trying to figure out where's the space to have their stories known, their history known, the violence that our country and violence from people within our country have done to them. And so just understanding the cultural nuances of there's reasons why we don't know these stories, and part of it's cultural, but part of it is also because of white supremacy. And so we want to be able to live in those tensions. And even just how I have fallen short in meetings and spaces where I can just be like, just share, just talk, or just bring your stories to light, and how dishonoring I'm being in those moments of even asking their stories to be known. And so I think for you and I, just wanting to learn, how do we, in a very honoring, respectful, dignifying way, elevate stories of our Asian American and Asian brothers and sisters? And so for this episode, Leith, what were some of the reasons behind this episode coming to play?
Yeah, you know, I mentioned it just a couple minutes ago, but just seeing the talk about what's currently happening in the Asian community, it's, you know, you can try to avoid it in the same and similar ways that we try to avoid other things that we don't want to see. And mainstream media, you know, finally is picking up on it, but it's taken a couple weeks, and a lot of it's been because of the push on social media. But talking about the very direct, violent attacks and vandalization, so attacks on people and then on the community, on businesses. And so just needing to respond to that and then and kind of go from there of what does this mean for you and I? What does this mean to the communities that we're a part of? And so, you know, the current things that have been happening in Oakland, San Francisco, so the Bay Area, and also New York City, wanting to talk about that and to name those things. You know, I saw the video of in Oakland's Chinatown, the 91-year-old man who was pushed from behind just walking down the street. And then I continued to read, and the same person did the same thing to a 60-year-old man and a 55-year-old woman, just kept going. And so I was just grieved watching that. Like, it just played on loop. And I'm like, what would push someone to for what reason? Like, there's no reason. But then I started reading more and recognizing that this has been happening to other Asian Americans in these communities. Even today, as we were talking to some of our friends, there was a funeral service. Matthew, I know you want to acknowledge the 84-year-old man who was attacked.
I'll try to pronounce his name, but to the best that I can, Vika Ratanapekti.
Thai man who was violently attacked on a walk, and he died a few days later. And so I think names are important. It's important to name people, name situations. And so there's these attacks on these individuals. A Filipino man in New York City was slashed in the face all across his face, and couldn't talk. And I read somewhere that no one helped him immediately, which again, that feels so dehumanizing to witness such an act of violence and then not help someone. Like,
yeah.
And I've never been in that situation, right? But I would hope that I would respond. I would do something, witnessing something like that. And so we're seeing these very violent attacks on people, but also on businesses. I know there's a couple businesses I read about that important information was stolen. It was broken into, social security numbers, important documents, thousands of dollars. The J District in Portland, 9 businesses that are owned by people who are Asian and Asian Americans have been vandalized, have been broken into, things have been stolen. And so there's just these very direct violence and attacks that are happening on the Asian community. And it's one, it's tied to going back to the previous administration calling COVID-19 the Chinese virus, or calling it Kung Flu, right? That Stop AAPI Hate, they've done a lot of research, have been tracking, reported, now a lot of it has gone unreported, but reported attacks on people who are Asian, and it was like 2,500 plus have been reported. The increase in crimes and violent attacks, it was like astronomical. I think it was like over 1,000%. So Stop AAPI Hate is actually a great page to follow, to look up, because they've got so much research. They've been tracking all this stuff that, again, unless you search it, it's not on your mainstream media in a lot of ways. But I also think it's interesting how this is happening on the heels of the Biden administration. Biden signed the executive order, a memorandum condemning and combating racism, xenophobia, and intolerance against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders in the U.S. And so it's just, again, interesting just tying the timeline together that was signed, you know, I think on day 2 or day 1 of Biden being inaugurated. And here we are a couple weeks into the administration. And this is happening to Asian communities, and the attack on the elderly. Like, I know the Asian community, Matthew, your community, the Black community, hold our elders in very high regard. There's so much respect. One of our friends that we talked to prior to this said it's not, you know, acknowledging one of the older women on the call, saying someone else called her elder, and they're not technically her elder, but she is, because that's the way our communities honor and respect those who are older than us. And so that collectiveness of acknowledging that. And so reading the stories, reading some of my friends' responses that I've seen on social media, or even just talking to them and seeing what's been happening to the elderly community and the Asian community, and the fear that's brought to them, thinking about their grandparents. It just has been so sad. So sad. And so,
well, even one thing that one of our friends told us is that because of that collective mindset combined with such a high respect for elders, they said that even though these attacks are people they don't know, when they see that, it's their grandpa, it's their grandma. And so there are a lot of Asian and Asian American people who are deeply hurting right now, seeing multiple violent attacks, deadly attacks, and in the streets and people's homes, and so it really is important to acknowledge just the cultural values that compound the pain. It's already evil and painful, like you said, that someone would go and just push someone and that they would die, but then to understand that it is really affecting a lot of people as they carry that as a people.
Yeah. So that's why we're having this conversation, Matthew, again, to acknowledge currently what's happening in the Asian community, and in the midst of Lunar New Year coming. We're recording this episode. It's actually the day after we record this is Lunar New Year. And so, again, the timing of everything is just so interesting. It feels just so evil as it can be. And so, but as we talked about, this isn't just the last 2 weeks. This is not just the last year with COVID-19. Like, there's a long history in this country of anti-Asianness, of racism toward people who are Asian, of Asian descent. And Matthew and I are not historians. We are learning. I've had to do more research. I've had to read different things. Even just last May, I was watching, I haven't finished it yet, but watching the Asian Americans PBS documentary, which opened my eyes to so much that I had not been told. It reminds me of what Faye had said, right? That their history is invisible often.
Yeah.
And so, but there is a history, and we all need to learn, for those of us who are not Asian. And I know my Asian American friends are encouraging other Asians to learn about their history, because it's part of our history, right? And so, you know, there's just a few things I want to acknowledge. I know, Matthew, you want to acknowledge a few things too, but I think we need to know these things as they play into the conversation, as they play into what we're witnessing. These are not just, again, these random isolated attacks or responses. They're tied to something deeper and longer that's been around. And so I recently just learned about one of the largest lynchings in our history of this country was targeted to Chinese people. It was like when LA was still forming, it was pretty small at the time. But two Chinese men had gotten into an argument, a white man was killed, and that incited a white mob, and several Chinese people were lynched. We don't hear about that. And I think even being Black and in this country and knowing that there's so much being highlighted through Equal Justice Initiative of Black people who have been lynched in this country over a couple hundred years, like, we need to know about all of those things, you know?
Yeah.
There's not this like separation that needs to be there. You know, it's tied together.
Yeah. And even just take it further, I think one of the things that I have noticed is being in California, a lot of people think that we're so progressive. And even as Californians, we often will judge people from the South and judge where we seen things more visible, or at least there's access to historical facts of what has happened. And so in California, we like to think that we're all that, and but our as a state, we hide history. We have hidden these realities of what has happened to Asian and Asian Americans. And so that's even just right there. As Californians, we have some reckoning to do of how we look at our own history and the things that we tend to ignore and keep in the dark.
Yep. Amen. It's important. And so that's, you know, one thing I was learning about immigration laws. Like, we hear a lot about that right now, right? All the different immigration policies for against refugees and some of those things. And so that's important for us to talk about. But again, we have to go back and learn about how some of the very first immigration laws were directly targeting people who were Chinese. And so I've read about the Chinese Exclusion Act, which was in 1882. I just learned about the Page Act of 1875, which specifically targeted Chinese women for really dehumanizing reasons. And so then just a few years later, you had the Chinese Exclusion Act. And so this country, the United States, quote, United States, had in its foundations, right? It's really problematic and racist. But in its very first immigration laws, as a way of just protecting or assuming things about a certain people group, started to get written into law, and the ramifications of those types of laws and policies signed by the government at the time. And then, and again, this is just a couple. There's so much more to learn there. Japanese internment camps.
Real quick. Okay. Even just like when you talk about going back, it almost sometimes feels like there's so many more layers. And one of the things I learned, I went to the Chinese, I think it's the Chinese American Museum in Portland. And one of the things, it took it further back to when Europeans were coming over to and stealing land. But before that even happened, there was this obsession over China and from Europe. And looking at the ways that they were very prosperous, they had tons of wealth and tons of spices, and just that their industry was flourishing, and there was this obsession and kind of a hand kind of, oh, you're good, you stay over there, from China. And so that obsession and kind of not being able to conquer and dominate kind of carried into our country and its foundation. And so, and even just a lot that happened even before our country wrote one of our first immigration laws that was racist towards Chinese people, but that even you take that back. And so there's just this lingering kind of racist, and you know, it's like, oh, if we can't dominate, then we'll exclude.
Yep.
And so that's what we've seen happen to our Chinese brothers and sisters. Yeah.
Oh, that's
If we can't control and dominate, then we will just try to exclude you from being here.
Wow. Unreal, but it's very real. Thanks for sharing that, Matthew. Again, and those are just a few things like that we're learning. And again, there's so much more. You know, I want to acknowledge the Japanese internment camps. Again, we don't really talk about that. When we talk about World War II and, you know, all that came after that, and, you know, it's just, we tend to skip over what happened to men and women and children who are Japanese in this country getting put into internment camps because they were Japanese.
Yeah. Which is just wild to think that, you know, right there, we are in the same year the world is discovering what was happening in Nazi Germany and people in concentration camps. And so we're just, you know, pointing the finger and the whole world looking to that. And then yet we were not having these mass killings, but we were still taking people, stripping them from everything they have and putting them in camps. And this is our grandparents' lifetime.
Yeah.
This is not that long ago. And so just the hypocrisy on one hand that we're the victors who defeated Hitler and we paint all this horrific stuff that they did, yet we were doing some of the same things at the exact same time.
Yep.
And we don't talk about it.
Nope.
And then you add that, and then going back to what we said at the beginning, the ways that our Asian brothers and sisters, they're silenced, they're put to the margins, their history is ignored and erased. And so then even what we learned about post-World War II, about Japanese Americans feeling the need to assimilate because of this intense hatred towards Japanese Americans.
Yeah, it's evil. And it's easy to point the finger at another country or another issue than to really look inwardly and look at ourselves and acknowledge how much evil is embedded into this country and what we're about and what we do. And so again, here we are to highlight some things, and it's important, some things that are really important for us to know, because the ramifications and the ripple effect of these types of decisions have present day implications. They're tied to generations. I think about when our friend, Faye was telling us, about Japanese internment camps and what her grandfather experienced and how that, the ramifications of that in the line of her family, right? That's just one family, you know? But we don't talk about that stuff because it's not fun, but because America's great, right? So, anyways, Matthew, I think you wanted to share a story here with regards to the Japanese internment camps.
Yeah. Well, again, talking about history being erased, the city I grew up in, Salinas, California, was one of the places where there was a Japanese internment camp, and it was a transition camp, but yet, nonetheless, a camp that was evil. And to live in a city where even that part of our history was never talked about. And the first time I really heard it acknowledged was when my high school graduation, there was, I think, about a dozen Japanese Americans who were in their, they were probably in their 80s, who walked with us because they didn't walk because they were taken into the internment camps. Wow. And that was the first time, like, okay, at a graduation, like, this is where we're starting this. And it's like a, this band-aid to make everyone else feel good, like, oh, look at, we're acknowledging, which in some ways it was so special to witness and be a part of that. But on the other hand, is like, does it stop here? And this very public, you know, way, and it almost seems like those who are putting the event on are actually the heroes. And so I think just even that, like, I grew up in a city where that was part of our history and it was never talked about. And so even just within that, and just, and I think just think that part of our history and our country, what happened to Japanese Americans and Japanese people is something that, in looking at another thing, is Dr. Seuss. And during that time, he was writing these newspaper article comic things that were overtly racist towards Japanese people. It's like, here is one of the most revered children's author. And it's like, I can't look at his books the same since I learned that a few years ago, because like, you were enticing violence. You were teaching children to discriminate, to be racist. And again, another thing, how have we not talked about this more openly and what our children are learning? And so just the ways, you know, it came from these very systemic ways where it was literally taking people, their businesses, you have a few minutes to get everything you have and you take into an internment camp, but then also from this educational reading, like it was everywhere.
And it's so embedded.
I just don't think that 60 yeah. years we're removed from it. No, I do not believe, like, we are not removed from that. And we still have so many ways that we are probably, you and I are still blind to the ways that mm-hmm. our country has discriminated against, and how even possibly we, you and I, have participated mm-hmm. in furthering and perpetuating the racism towards Japanese Americans and Japanese people.
Yeah. And I think that the comment you just made about how 60 years is not that long. And I mean, that's a reality, right? Like, the things that have been embedded, not just from an immigration law or policy being enacted, but in children's books, in media. It's mm-hmm. it's what I think about when my niece, who's in middle school, being called the N-word on her basketball team in 2021, to say, oh, that was this long ago, racism was that long ago, or, you know, segregation was that long ago, we don't need to talk about it. No, it has present day implications
yep.
for my niece who's in middle school. And so that also has present day implications, what you're just talking about, and the racism, the vitriol that is directed yep. at people who are Asian Americans of Asian descent. Like, those things carry through generations because they go unchecked, they go untalked, they're not talked about. And then they continue to present themselves. Yep. And so that's why we have to share the things about Dr. Seuss. We have to share about the immigration laws and policies that were enacted years ago to even understand what we're currently experiencing with the immigration yes. laws and policies. Like, this isn't new. It's not yeah. new. It might be targeting a different people, but the ways that the government has acted is not new. That's part of we don't connect the dots well in this country, because then it means we'd have to really see how evil, not saying that everything this country has done has been terrible. I can say that, right? Mm-hmm. But I think we can all also see the nuance and see, but we have to talk about the things we haven't talked about. Because mm-hmm. if we don't understand the full picture, if we don't understand the full story, we're going to uphold and uplift something that's actually just more of an ideal that makes us feel good about ourselves because we don't want to look at the other stuff. And so, mm-hmm. again.
And just to have like some freaking empathy.
Yes.
Like, you may have no context for it. Whether you're Latino, you're Black, mm-hmm. you're white, you have no context for it, but to hear the stories, and then to like you said, like, we're not the ways that passes down on every level, and then another level is psychological trauma and the way that gets yes. passed down through generations, and the ways that I've met people who were taken to these internment camps mm-hmm. and hearing their stories of how everything was stripped away from them. They didn't see some of their family died in the internment camps. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, to have empathy, even if that's not your story mm-hmm. and you didn't know and all the da-da-da-da-da-da-da, mm-hmm. but we are to be empathetic, yes. even as for those of us who are followers of Christ, we mm-hmm. are commanded to be empathetic,
yep.
like Jesus, who can empathize with us in every way. Mm-hmm. And so that's for like a piece that's so missing in these yeah. conversations, particularly for our Asian American brothers and sisters, is empathy. Like, we yep. need to have empathy mm-hmm. in order to continue this conversation, yep. to grieve and cry and weep over historical and current day racism.
Mm-hmm. And if we don't know those things, it's hard to do that in a lot of ways. It even ties into the model minority myth. Our friend Jocelyn had created this incredible graphic highlighting this a few
Follow
months back.
Her.
Yes. But again, just to educate people and make people aware. But then when you read about it, it's like, I've been able to see how that played out, how that's mm-hmm. played out in my life, the assumptions I have made about mm-hmm. people who are Asian, and not even realizing that's some of the thoughts that I had until I reflected back on that. But again, understanding the historical context helps us to see how the model minority myth continues to play out in 2021. Mm-hmm. I think another thing that's important, one of our friends had shared, was talking about, again, history. She had shared, when slavery became illegal, that the Chinese and Japanese were used as cheap and underpaid labor. Mm. So essentially it's like, oh, you're going to tell us we can't have this type of free labor, so then we're going to exploit these people.
Yep.
We're still going to carry these things out, right? Yep. And just again, the way that how the evil in those ways carries into other people groups, and you just yeah. see it manifest itself in really ugly ways, in really evil ways. But again, I think it's important for us. We have to talk about those things. We have to learn those parts of history mm-hmm. to understand what we're currently seeing and experiencing.
And it's important too for every, you know, this episode is centering the Asian and Asian American people. But, you know, as we talk about the racism historical, the first thing we got to do is have a mirror mm-hmm. and look at ourselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can look at our country, we can look at policies, yep. but like, what are ways I and people who look like me, mm-hmm. our people, have contributed to this. And mm-hmm. one of the ones I learned a couple years ago, I believe it was when I went to the state capitol in Arizona, Phoenix, and learning how during World War II and during the internment camps that the U.S. government was asking all Latin American presidents and governments to deport their Japanese citizens to the United States so that they can be put in internment camps and be used for bargaining.
Wow.
For some, you know, for exchanges of prisoner of war.
Wow.
And amongst other things. So there was, I believe at the time, about 25,000 Japanese people throughout all of Latin America who were, that was their home. Mm-hmm. And for generations, and specifically in Peru, was one of the places that had a very large population. And there is about, I think, 2,200 people just from Peru alone who the wow. government from Peru said yes to the U.S. government and sent 2,200 people to the United States and to internment camps. And then after the war was over, I think about 500 plus were used in prisoner exchange of war. And so you had 500 people who were sent to Japan, and that was not their home. Even though they were Japanese, that was not their home. Mm-hmm. And then those who were here in the United States, they became illegal immigrants.
Wow.
And then a lot of Latin America didn't want any Japanese people to send back to their countries. And so that's something that Latinos and Latinas have to deal with. What are ways that our, you know, governments from Latin America contributed and participated in this type of evil and hate, and how that, you know, that was in the 40s, but that we're not removed from that. I see it play out in Latino communities. I see the racism and prejudice. I see the ways that we are deeply, we can be deeply hateful towards Asian people. And that's just for, like, I want to own that. I want to see it in myself and my family and my communities and call it out and just acknowledge, like, we have so much hate towards the Asian community that we have to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a great segue, Matthew. Just what does this mean for us in our communities, for me and you personally, and then the communities that we're a part of, to really address anti-Asianness, and what's it look like to the both and for two things are true. We can do both, yes. right? But I think I think about in the Black community, this conversation feels challenging in a lot of ways. I was sharing with some friends the other day as we were talking about this, and how, you know, being a Black woman in Atlanta, there was a list of, like, hair stores that were put out that were Black owned. And I looked at the list, and only one of them, and I'm not far from downtown Atlanta, so I'm like in the city, and only one of them was close to where I live. The rest of them are way far from the city because a lot of beauty supply stores are actually owned by Asian Americans. And so I know that came up even over the summer with the rise in violent, the racial injustice that was being highlighted against Black people, and that some of those conversations surfaced. And I remember seeing even images, though, which was really beautiful, of some Black people actually saying, don't take down these beauty supply stores. And people would be like, but they're owned by people who are Asian. They're not even, you know, our people. And they said, no, we're not going to do that. And so I think that's even an example of, we need to have that conversation because it's definitely a tension point, and there's reasons for that, but not to overlook that. And so, again, as I'm, for myself, being able to acknowledge that and pay attention to that. But I think, I've been having this thought recently of, what does this conversation look like in the Black community? Because I don't hear it a lot. I really don't. We are so focused, and I think having to focus, like, people talking about anti-Blackness, what it means to be Black in this country, helping other Black people, like, what's it look like to flourish in the midst of all of this? We have to talk about that. Totally. And there's absolutely times where you prioritize and center that. That does not mean we should not talk about our biases and our prejudice, consciously and subconsciously, that in the Black community we have towards people who are Asian and Asian Americans, towards the Asian community. And so I don't know. I don't have, like, a blueprint or, like, here's exactly what this looks like, right? Like, learning and figuring out as I go, thinking about my Asian American friends who have been very gracious to me, who have honestly shared, who've been willing to share. And, like you said, who said, we trust you to talk about this. Like, that it feels really weighty and heavy. But again, I think for the challenge I have felt recently of, I need to talk to some of my Black friends. We got to talk about this. We got to talk about it, because we might share it on our Instagram story, or, you know, you might text your fan, but we need to talk about it. We need to have a more intentional conversations about anti-Asianness and racism towards Asian and Asian Americans that we don't talk about. And so I just think that's really important. And I think something that I've appreciated, I'm saddened by that it's happening, but also it's like important that it's happening in some ways. But the rise in awareness for the Asian American community and the Asian community of what's happening, right? The violence and the hate. And so seeing this awakening and like, what does it mean to be Asian? What does it mean to be an Asian American? But at the same time, in the midst of that conversation, what I've been paying attention to also is how, like, as anti-blackness is surfacing in those conversations, like some of the response has been, oh, there's these violent crimes happening in Chinatown and to businesses. We just need to increase policing. And I've seen some Asian Americans say, wait. Yeah. No, because we know what that means for black and brown communities.
Yep.
The answer is not the very thing that's already oppressing a people group. That's not the answer for our own, to deal with our own oppression and violence towards our community. That's not the answer. There has to be a different way. We're so used to that being the answer. We're so used to saying, just increase policing. Mm-hmm. It's like putting more police in black communities, like I think about in Compton. Let's just increase how many police are there, because that's the answer. That's
or in the Bay Area, where some of these incidents happen, when last year there are multiple black and brown people who were shot and killed unarmed.
Exactly.
And so, like, exactly where this is happening. So it is
exactly. Like, and so I think it's just what I'm seeing in the conversation in the Asian community, I think, is actually a good model of let's talk about what's happening in our communities, but let's not put down another people group, another ethnic group, as a way of addressing how we handle what's happening to us. And so I've just really appreciated it. And, you know, one of our friends, again, she's getting a lot of shout outs here. She's great. And she's one of many voices that, you know, Matthew and I are influenced by and who we get to call friend. But she just said, I wish we would all talk more about our anti-Asianness and our anti-blackness, like just name it and be honest. And I think, again, in the black community, we need to name it and be honest, but what do we do about it? Don't just name it, but we need to have the conversation and then collectively talk about how do we move forward and address it and not ignore it, because it's very real and it's very present.
Yeah. And I see that too within my, and you know, Latino community. I think the couple ways I see this play out is when we have conversations about immigration, you know, and there is a very directed and very heightened violence towards Latinos and particularly Mexicans and Mexican children, not just Mexicans, Central American children who are at the border. But at the same time, being able to acknowledge that immigration issues are not just confined to brown people. They affect black people. They affect the Asian community. They affect the Arab community. And so I think it is that continued theme that we've been talking about is the both and, that two things can be true at the same time. While we as Latinos fight for the rights of our people, particularly when it comes to immigration, we also have to remember to put our story in a greater context of historic and global context, to know, okay, right now is the time. Yes, like, we need to fight like hell for our people, but also we need to create space that the table, and it's kind of like what we talk about, this whole oppression Olympics. Like, I can fight for people who look like me while I fight for people who look like you and people who look like Faye. And so, you know, and so but for a very specific way as Latinos and Latinas is to expand the conversation on immigration, which I have been at fault for. And I most of the time when I think about immigration, the violence and the policies, the racism, I often blindly just look at what's happening to brown people, and I need to repent from that and specifically acknowledge that so many of our immigration issues and policies stem from what happened with the Chinese Exclusion Act. And so we need to recognize that. And then the other thing that I can see is the machismo culture, the toxic masculinity that takes place in our culture. And so I even think about the ways that I've seen men from my community be very toxic, emasculate other men for different reasons. And I think about when Dr. Soon Chun Ra, I believe, told us once that oftentimes when Asian men are in movies, it's often in this way that emasculates and that kind of tears down their man, like their masculinity and their manhood. And so just that is a reality. And so within our own communities as men to kind of check ourselves in the ways that we live out this machismo culture, toxic masculinity, and all of that, which we're going to be having some more conversations about toxic masculinity in the future. But specifically, I think those are two practical ways when it comes to immigration and when it comes to toxic masculinity, ways that that will perpetuate, contribute, spark racism and prejudice towards the Asian community.
That's really good, Matthew. It's specific. It's something that you recognize, you know, and for me, some of the things I've recognized, and not, you know, it's like, how do we do that? We just got to try. We got to start somewhere. But what you just talked about is like the oppression Olympics, right? And that's one of the lies of white supremacy, is the oppression Olympics and pitting communities against one another. And that, you know, I think about the Black community and the Asian community, you know, this, some of this is tied back to the LA riots when Rodney King was beaten by the police in 92. And so look into this, research this, Google it. But again, I think in the Black community that happened, and it's played itself out in some really problematic ways that we haven't talked about and acknowledged. But again, it's like we can do both, and we don't have to. White supremacy wants us to pit each other against one another, and we don't have to do that. We shouldn't do that. And it ties into what our friend Jess said. She said, our collective liberation is tied to celebration and honor beyond a holiday or a designated month. And I think that this ties into it of we can talk about both. We can hold space for both at the same time. Because when we're dreaming and hoping that it's not going to be Black History Month or AAPI Month or Women's History Month, like, doesn't have to be those things, because we have to have that right now, because it's not actually included in when we talk about American history. That is very white centered in so many ways, right? And so one day, hopefully, that will change and be different. But the challenge, and it's like, oh, for my friends who are Asian or who are saying, I don't know if I can talk about what's happening in our community because it's Black History Month. Mm-hmm. That grieves me. Yeah. That makes me so sad. It's like, no, we need to talk about that. There's a tension and we can name it. We have to talk about that. Yeah. This is important. And so again, I love that our collective liberation, what it's tied to. Mm-hmm. And so how do we be for one another? In order to do that, there are things that we have to address and talk about. And
just like that, it's like, if, you know, let's say all these immigration policies towards Latinos end and we don't experience this crazy amount of racism and violence, but there's still violence towards our Asian American and Asian brothers and sisters, then if I can't still be just as grieved and angry and scared and all the things, then I'm just not thinking, how we should as the family of God. Like, when one part of the body hurts, the whole body hurts. The whole body breaks down.
Yep.
And so for us as followers of Christ, when our Asian brothers and sisters are hurting, we all should be hurting.
Yes.
And not to tell them, get over it, get better, move on faster. Okay, now let's get back to Black History Month. No, it's like, we're all hurting. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's just something that we got to, like, as we all, as communities of color, are fighting for liberation for our people, that we'd also keep the greater collective, everyone in mind, that none of us are free. we often say, until all of us are free.
Yep. Amen. And I just want to say, as we get ready to close here, not just my friends, but to my friends who are Asian American, and to those that aren't, that I don't know, that I haven't had the pleasure to meet yet, that might listen to this episode, I just want to say, like, there's space for you, there's space for your story, there's space for your history. We need it. We need you. We need your community. And I just want to acknowledge and grieve at the so many ways in the Black community has diminished or not yet acknowledged the very real present pain in history, but also the beauty, the beauty of the Asian community. I don't grow into more of who I am apart from my Asian brothers and sisters. And so I just want to say that publicly. I know, like, Matthew, you mentioned very early on this episode, the deference, you know, not to take up too much space, and you're not. We need your voice. We need you to share. But we need you to be you in the fullness of who you are and how God has created you. It's good and it's beautiful. And so I thank you for your resilience. Why you have to be resilient grieves me. I'm learning that we hold that mantle of resilience up without acknowledging why we have to be resilient, what made our communities resilient. And yet I see it and I honor it. I want to honor that. And no, and again, I just want to say there's space for you, and it's an honor. I think I can speak for Matthew. It's an honor for Matthew and I in this short podcast episode to create and hold some space for the Asian community. And so I just wanted to, just wanted to say that before we close out. So,
and those for, you know, for those who are listening, we want to, in our footnotes, in whatever way you listen to the roll down, we want to make sure that we list out some resources, some things to that, because we don't want, what we don't want is for non-Asians to now go hit up all your Asian friends and start asking them to be your teacher.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. But you, what do we say when I think like months ago, you and I were talking, Google's your friend.
Yeah.
Google's your best friend. If there's some questions you have that you're like, I don't understand that historical thing or this or that, Google it. It's not that hard.
Yes.
But for real, it's like, well, but we are going to list some resources that have been helpful for us and that can help bring understanding and context to make all of us better allies.
Yep. All right, y'all. Well, thank you thank you for listening. The Roll Down Podcast, we have the honor to be part of the Chasing Justice Podcast Network. So to find out more, visit chasingjustice.com and follow Chasing Justice on Instagram. They just posted about the Chasing Justice Podcast Network. So the Roll Down Podcast is one of a few that are part of that network, and it is an absolute honor that we get to be a part of that. Please rate and review on Spotify and Apple and share with your friends. You can find us on Instagram at the Roll Down Podcast. And y'all, we got a whole team, so we want to shout out our team. We could not do this without y'all. So our awesome producer, Caleb, Jaslyn, who recently joined our team, holding down social media and marketing for us, and Cameron, who's our graphic designer. So we love our team. We're grateful for y'all. And thanks for listening to The Rolldown.